So we are holding in the fourth parak of Damai, and So the general klal is that the amaratim, by definition, aren't a ne'eman. They're not believed when it comes to hafrashos. That's the working definition, and therefore what comes out of their hands is called Damai. But there are going to be certain exceptions, and this Mishnah is going to deal with the exceptions, and really the whole parak large deals with when and how much we can stretch things to believe the amaratim. The reason why, you have to keep reminding yourself that really midoraisa, we already checked in, most of the amaratim do take the afrashas. So we're worried about a miyat. So really the rabbis were more strict and said, even though rov do take, we want to be strict. And then they said, well, sometimes we'll be lenient on it. So you shouldn't think it's a, there, you know, Torah is reality. You can't bend it. So you have to keep always keep that in mind. You often hear the question about from, you know, people can't, you know, you see the rabbis found loopholes elsewhere, you know, things like Erev and stuff. But if you understand what Erev is, not they found a loophole to carry. First the rabbi said, don't carry in a plate that looks maybe like a Rosh Hashanah. If it's mutter to carry when Erev is, right, normally. Minotaur. Then the rabbi said, don't carry there. Then they made a loophole so you can get away with it if you need to. And many things like that. So, again, you have to keep that in mind. It's not that we're being lenient for some reason. The rabbis wanted to be strict when it came to be suspicious of a maratim, but we're going to make leniences for different reasons. And you'll see here today some of the reasons why. So, halokeach peros memisha eino ne'eman. If one acquired in any way fruit from someone who's not a ne'eman, ala maestras, for taking maestras, these are not marats by definition, v'shachach la'asron, and then he forgot to take his afrashas, the demai afrashas, you need to take. So now, what happens if on Shabbos he's there? You have to know on Shabbos you can't take afrashas off of tevel. Off of vadai tevel, you can't take afrashas. It looks like you're masakin, you're fixing things up. It's not a Shabbosic thing to do. But here, you have the competing problem, which is, it's probably okay, and on top of that, there's the issue of Kavod Shabbos. You know, there's Oneg Shabbos and Kavod Shabbos, so you need to have food. So now you're about to sit down for dinner, you realize that the food isn't properly tithed. So v'shalu b'Shabbos, and so if you ask the mocher, you could shalo. You may ask him. You ask him on Shabbos, and you say, you know, is it? Tell me, did you take the farsh or not? And if he says yes, yochel al piv, you're allowed to eat it based on his, literally on his mouth, but it means on his word. You can trust him. The bartender brings an interesting reason. He says, because even though amaratim might be a little bit questionable normal situations, but they're afraid of Shabbos, and they wouldn't lie on Shabbos. It's interesting. You see, like, the amaratim, I don't want to say who they remind, like, who the amaratim, the picture painted in my mind, remind me of in our society, but perhaps you can, in your mind, imagine. These are people, they're good people. They're good people. They're just, you know, they can't bother with technicalities, but you're going to ask them on Shabbos, it's not going to lie straight out to your face, right? Okay, so because of those two reasons, because of A, they won't lie on Shabbos, and B, because of the issues of owning Shabbos and covered Shabbos, you need to have food properly, so the rabbis were lenient. But of course, when Shabbos ends, chashcha motzei Shabbos, once it gets dark on motzei Shabbos, lo yochal, that food which at Sudish Lishas you were eating now becomes forbidden to eat, Aji Aser, until you take the proper freshes, the demai freshes misafik. So just a
leftover.
Whatever's left over. Whatever was eaten is eaten. But whatever's left, you can't, you know, reverse
back. Even though you know that he didn't lie.
Right. Because you're relying on two things. You're relying on the fact that he didn't lie, and you're relying on the rabbi's leniency for Oneg Shabbos. Which the Oneg Shabbos doesn't fall into play anymore. Yeah. Okay. Now, lo matzo, what if you can't find him, the seller? So you can't ask him now. Amar lo echad she'eno ne'eman al hamatas, and someone else tells him, meaning the one who wants to eat, one she'eno ne'eman, who's not believed, al hamatas, and it was a third party, says, oh yeah, I know that guy, and I definitely saw him. He took his maestras. So now, both the guy who allegedly took the maestras, the hafrashas, is not, he's an eino ne'eman, not believed. He's an Amaretz, and this person who's testifying on his behalf is also an Eino Ne'eman, but still, right, if he says Musar Ne'en, he says they were indeed tithe properly, Ochel El Piv, again, you can eat on this third party's endorsement, even though he's really no more believable than the second party. But again, because of Onik Shabbos and Kavod Shabbos, we want to have food, we rely on it. Chashcha Motzei Shabbos, but if it gets dark on Motzei Shabbos, lo yochel ad sheyaser. Back again to the previous status.
Is it just that he actually saw him do the
food? He says they're mice. He says this guy did it.
But he saw him do it?
He's saying this guy did it, yeah.
He knows his personality.
He's saying he knows this food was mice, this time. However he knows.
Again, that's on Shabbos.
It's not a technical atus. I don't know. You know, maybe saw it in the videotape. He's watching the CCTV. I don't know. But he is testifying. I know he did it. We can rely on him, this third party. Now, new unrelated point here. There's a concept called, normally when it comes to foods, so midoraisi you have what's called bitzel barov, which means even if you have a majority against minority and you don't know where the minority is. The rule is actually really complicated, but bottom line is you're allowed to go after the majority, even midoraisa, right? So, which is why we're allowed to eat all these. We've checked that the majority of the food supply is properly tied, so you can rely on it. Now, we have a separate issue of, normally of tam, of taste. When taste gets mixed in, so now we are much more strict. We go bottom line, so once we want a ratio of 60 times Heter against one time Isser to permit it. Like, again, these are the stuff that years of Smicha study are made of, it's complicated. But the point is, normally 60 is what you need. When it comes to Truma, they ratchet it up. There's some Truma they want it to be extra strict on, and they so even 60 times won't cut it, you need 100 times. Okay, you need 100 times as a special Chumra by Truma. So, now, the big fear you have with your demai is that it has embedded in it trumas meiser, right? Trumas meiser is truma, it's the same thing, right? There's two trumas, there's the truma gadola, the main truma, you give the first 1% that goes to the kohen, and then from your 10% that's the meiser, the levi has to take a truma, 10% of that 10%, another effectively 1%, which goes to the kohen also. And although demai we keep on saying, we're not afraid of the truma gadola being there, we say the amaratim took out the truma, but they incorrectly think that until they take away the miser, there's no trumas miser to be afraid of either. So what happens is, when you do your tefrashes for demine, in the fifth pair, tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, we'll see how that all works. Relatively complicated. But what you're trying to get out, basically, you're trying to get your trumas miser out of the mixture. And your miser sheni also. So, here's what happens. If you take out your trumas miser, so really what you have is 1% of the pile is going to be Trumas Meiser, and 99% will be Heter. Okay, which is not 100 to 1. It's only 99 to 1. When the rabbis say 6 or 60th, for example, I mean to eat it, you need to have 60 parts Heter, not 59 parts. 60 parts Heter against 1 Isser, and for Truma, you need 100 parts Heter for 1 Isser. So if you only have a regular case where you are Mafresh 1%, take out 1% for the Trumas Meiser, you have 1 part Isser to 99 parts Heter, and by Truma, that's no good. So what's going to happen here is that your Trumas Meiser is getting mixed back into the bunch, which is going to ruin everything. That's the concern here, you understand? So normally, if you take your truma, which is 1%, and it falls back into the pot afterwards, the whole thing's a loss. You have to sell the whole thing to a kohen. It's a normal case. But here, we're more lenient. So here we have the case, trumas meiser, that 1% that came, 10% of the 10%, trumas meiser, shel demai, shechazer lemakoma, that ended up back where it started out from. I don't know, you took out of the barrel of, you know, grapes, took out your 1%, and then the grapes fell right back in the barrel and got mixed up, so now you're doomed. So, Rabbi Shimon Shazuri Omer, Af Bechol Sholo V'Ochel Al Piv. He says, in such a case, you're going to ruin your entire everything for that, and it's demai, and it probably is okay anyways. So he says, even on Chol, even not on Shabbos, you can ask the person straight out who sold it to you, say, look him in the eyes and say, listen, this is my situation, I need to know the truth. And on that, you can rely on that. And that is the halacha. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Shazuri. It's interesting that the Yushalmi brings the chacham who argue with him, but the halacha goes like him anyways. I don't really have an answer to you why. Like, normally a Kalei Hara, he wouldn't be featured, but we saw once before something similar, that the Mishnayas brought the Das Yachid and left the chacham out, and the halacha goes like the Das Yachid and the Mishnah, so maybe that's part of the answer. Yeah. Okay, great. Mr. Bass. Okay, so here's another Mishnah that we're also talking about relying on Amaretz, but for a different reason. This time is for the sake of peace. So it says, Hamadir es chavero sheyochel etzlo. So, which literally means one takes a netter, he takes some kind of oath, however we translate the word netter, a vow, I think it's just translated in English, that literally he vows against his friend that he should eat with him. But what it means is, according to the Rambam and most, is he takes a netter that if you don't come to my dinner that I'm inviting you to, then like that's it. You will never take any benefit from me again. That's it. So he's very serious about it. He's going to get offended. Now, a couple technical points. Technical point number one is that normally a neder is different than a shvua. I'm going to explain them right now to you. So most learn that this is a neder. And a neder is when you forbid an object. You say, this object is now forbidden to me. Right? So it's a negative, and it goes on a particular thing. So I could say that all my possessions are now all your possessions are forbidden to me, for example, or all my possessions are forbidden to you. That would be considered a neder, okay? As opposed to a shavua, which is to swear you do something positive. Like I swear I'm going to, you know, give that money. That's called a shavua, okay? So it sounds like this would be a case of a shavua, because you're basically saying if you don't come eat by me ever again, that's it. We're not friends anymore. Which, right? So the Bar Tanura learns that it's really, the words not said here are, my stuff becomes aser to you, and your stuff, you'll never again benefit from my stuff again if you don't eat from me. And the Rambam learns it's slavdavka. It means like he takes a shvua, but it just says, you know, he's taking a general, he's swearing, I swear that you'll never benefit from me again. Now the issue here, of course, is just peace. We want peace in society, and this person obviously can be very offended if you don't come eat by his house. So, in general, you know, that's, peace is very nice, but you have to draw the line somewhere, right? And the truth is that the Mefarshim draw the line quite high. They say this specifically is a case where it's the guy's kid's wedding. It's not just like he won't come to you for dinner. That's, you know, I'm sorry, I won't eat by you. That's too bad. I'm happy with that. But if this is like already offensive, right? The Bar Tanura says it's his son, it's his first wedding, and like, you know, this is, you know, if you don't come, this is very bad. And the Grot sets it even higher. The Grot says, no, it's the cases where it's this guy's son and this guy's daughter are getting married to one another. And the guy's still not coming. Right? So whatever the case is, it's serious offense being caused. And therefore, the rabbis are lenient. The problem is that, so this guy who made the, who's making this oath, the neder or the shua, who eino mamino ala masras, he's not to be trusted. So what are you supposed to do? So the halach is ochel imo b'shabbos harishona. You indeed could, if he's telling you that it's kosher, you can eat with him that one Shabbos. But the Mefarshim, they say, what's the issue of Shabbos? Is it issues of, you know, Shabbos is a more important meal to him? But it's the wedding meal at the Shabbos. But or maybe you have to add on that he believed on Shabbos. All these things. But either way, it's a chashuv meal to him. The first time you can do it. Va'af al pisha eno ma'amino ala masras, even though you don't trust him. All these cases can be amaratim, because once he's a nara amarat, you'd believe him. This guy is not to be, this guy's a regular amarat, and you just don't trust his kashrus. I guess, well, you see the standards are very high. But for sure.
I'm saying, do poskim use this for shalom bayis purposes?
Poskim, sure, there's lots of leniencies. Like Rav Moshe, I don't get this halacha so much, but Rav Moshe, for example, says, if I understand correctly, that the Bali Tshuva can rely on their mother, for example. Like, you can believe your mother. Your mother wouldn't lie to you. Which is like, your mother's not a Shomer Shabbos. But he says, if your mother says, I bought it from the kosher shop, you can believe her. For example, I mean, that's relying on a big leniency, right? So, because otherwise it would become very unpleasant between father and mother and child. Maybe your father too, I don't remember, but the mother's in the cooking, so.
Why do we repeat that sentence,
I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know. I don't have like a proper Mishnah in front of me here. It's like, look around. I don't know. I will, Blinetta, try to get back to you. Oh, which reminds me, I have to get back to you on two other issues. What were they?
Mezuzah.
Oh, yeah, mezuzah. Mezuzah is an oversight. They bring mezuzah in. That's that. There you go. Because the new roomish, newish room, they need to bring the mezuzah. And to kind of shook. So we asked, this is the middle of a Mishnah here. Sorry for the recording. We'll have to track it down, edit it out. So we asked yesterday, we said, the halacha is that if you pick up something and you that's an acquisition, you put it back, you have to now meister before you put it back in the pile. So I don't understand, if you're in Tel Aviv and you pick something up thinking you're going to buy it, the money's not what requires it, but picking it up is what requires it, change your mind and put it back, you should have to be mafresh before you put it back in the pile. So I asked Rav Lin, what's one is that? Okay, so this is what he told me. It didn't really excite me. I'll try to tell it over the best. He said, "Bizman is it?" That's not how our markets work. Today, the markets work such that the acquisition, like the seller himself, doesn't have a mind to sell it to you until you give him the money, right? In other words, so his example was, you know, if right then you know someone would break in and destroy everything in the shop once you've got it in your shopping basket, like no one would dream of making you pay for what was in your shopping basket. Well, alternatively, he said, if the store has a no returns policy, they certainly wouldn't object to you putting it back. That was his first example, probably a better example even. If a store has an absolute no return policy, they still wouldn't object to you putting it back on the shelf before you left the shop. So he says you haven't acquired it yet. That was
his. I know a case where my child broke something in the store, and I went to pay at the front desk, and they said you don't have to. You didn't buy it yet, it's not yours.
Okay, that's maybe a separate issue, because that's hezek. Okay, not for this minute, but a little, it's not buying, it's breaking, a little different. Anyway, so that was what he said. The reason why I'm not, I guess it's hard for me to imagine their shooks weren't like that. That's why hard for me to imagine that wasn't the case back then. Maybe it wasn't the case back then. In any case, that was his answer. His answer doesn't apply anymore today, just because to make a kinyan requires that the person acquiring needs to have in mind that this, I'm not lifting up to look at it, I'm lifting up to acquire it for myself, and also the seller has to be having in mind he's giving it to you, which is why in the other Mishnahs yesterday, it was always sort of predicated on the assumption that everyone agreed on the prices before the lifting happened. That everyone knows it's, you know, one shekel per potent, whatever it is. Otherwise, there's still negotiations to be made on the costs. So he was saying, our marketplace today, that's not how it works. So that was them. Okay. Okay, so now, sorry, back to the idea. Now, so you have a new question today, which is why it says again, "Afal pi she'eino ma'amino ala ma'aseh." I don't have an answer. Sure, seems redundant to me. I don't know. I'll look into it and try to get back to you. Yeah.
It doesn't say "eino
ma'amino."
It means "eino ma'amino." It means he himself doesn't believe him.
Well, no. Look at it again. Hamadras chaveros. A person says takes an oath or a vow, whatever vow, that this person better eat by me or else dot dot dot. Vu eino mamino ala maestras, and the invitee doesn't trust the invitor. Ochli imo b'shabbos rishona, he can still eat with him the first Shabbos. Va'afal pi she'eino mamino ala maestras, and he doesn't trust him the maestras.
Why does it say eino nema? Why does it say the guy's eino nema? It says eino mamino. He specifically knows him, and he's saying
you shall be.
See, I still
Yeah, I hear your question.
No, I know he's not watching.
What does it say? That's secular.
I have a note here that the Rishalmi does say Naaman the second time.
Oh, Naaman. That's interesting.
My Mishnah says an Amaretz is inviting a Chaver or a Naaman.
Okay. So if there's different gears, I saw elsewhere, maybe I'll show in a minute, that there's a difference between Naaman and Ma'amino, but it's okay. I don't have a good answer yet.
The shaman would be easier.
Yeah, it is easier, but yeah. Okay, it's a good question. You get a point. I get a point on the chart.
It's not because the person who's himself is a neiman. Because the person who's eating it is a neiman.
Yeah, for sure. He's
in. The person who wants to be a neiman is more like telling me he should eat himself in
Amoritz. All true, but the question, whatever it is, it's saying the same thing twice. I mean, whatever it is, it is. That's the question.
Maybe it's just going to say that even if you're not a neiman, you'll still be a neiman afterwards.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think that's what it's saying. But, okay. Zarchian.
Did the Chaver or the Neman swear not to eat by an Amaretz? And now he's
breaking his shabbat? No. The oath is the person inviting, the Amaretz is inviting the Talmud Chacham to dinner at his place. And he says, and this is the last time you say no to me. If you don't come to me this time, it's my kid's wedding, that's it. We're through, you know? So, and I swear you'll never eat by me again. That's so that he sees blood is boiling. In such a case, we're lenient. Ubavad, however, provided that shayomalo musarnhen, the person has to indeed confirm explicitly that he has to testify that it's to the Talmud of Chacham, the Amar Tzar say it's indeed properly tithed. Okay, Ubishabbos Shnia, and the second time this goes around, those who are focused on the Shabbos angle of it, and it's a wedding meal, are going to ask, well, you don't get two Shabbos wedding meals, so they bring Gemara Ksubas and Daf Ches that in those days they even had like up to 30 days wedding meals, like, you know, like what we'd call Sheva Brachas, let's say, you know. Okay, so, but the second time around, that's what it means. Af al pi sheneder eat memeno hanaya, even though he again takes a nether, same kind of nether that, you know, you'll, a strong, he forbids him from getting further benefit. The Amarat forbids the Talmud Chacham from getting further benefit from him stuff. Lo yochel achi yasser. It's too bad. Once, in other words, once is enough to make peace. More than that, not. So you see that the standard for the leniencies for this, you know, sympathy, peace sympathy is high. Okay. Good. Mishnah Gimel. Now, okay. Now, when you take your hafrashas off, so you don't technically need to actually be mafresh means to take away, like kufresh means to set aside. So you normally would you know, you'd actually pull apart pieces in this part over here, that part over there. But when it comes to demai, remember much of the stuff you have to take off, you actually allow it to eat. So let's focus specifically here on the trumas meiser. The trumas meiser you need to get out, right? But to get that, you first need to take meiser out, and then from the meiser comes the trumas meiser. Meiser is 10%. Trumas meiser 10% of that 10%. But you don't actually have to physically pull out 10% of the food supply and then break it. You can just, what's called kore shem, you can just call it the name. This is meiser. Give it, you know, you don't have to actually physically do anything. Okay, and that works. Kriya shem is enough to be called a hafrasha. Okay? Then it actually physically to pull things apart for, say, meiser risha. Okay, we'll see more details in the beginning of Perek Hey, all the movements. But that's the issue you need to know here about kore shem. So our Mishnah now is dealing with something called with meiser ani. Meiser ani, which is food that belongs to the ani. Okay? But really, we said you're allowed to eat it, remember, because we said a motzi mechaveiro lav araya, the one who is trying to get me out of his friend, he has to bring proof, since the one who is now the mochzik, the one who has the food in his pocket, he has no proof. He says, demai, who says, I owe it to you. So he doesn't have to give the food to the ani, but maybe he wants to, so, but he doesn't have to. So this is the issue, the background here.
Wait, which ones do you have to
you have to take out? You have to take trumas meiser out, and you have to take out meiser sheni, because the meiser sheni has to be eaten with tahara in Jerusalem. Those are the two. So you'll take meiser, then you'll take for the meiser, you'll take the trumas meiser off for the kohen, you'll eat the meiser yourself, and then you'll also take out meiser sheni a second tithe, which has to go to Yerushalayim to be eaten. And in years 3 and 6, instead of meiser sheni, it becomes meiser ani, and that would go to the ani, but you can eat it yourself because it's only financial, and he has the burden of proof.
So the truma also has to be taken off.
So, but not truma, because truma we say the amaratim take the truma off. Truma gedola is never worried about in the mind. Okay, so Mishnah Gimel. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, ein adam tzarech likro shame. A person doesn't need to be kore shame, meaning specify specifically what. L'maaser ani, to the maaser ani shall demai. Maaser ani shall demai. In other words, you're allowed to eat the maaser ani shall demai. So you don't even need to bother like saying, first, here it is, and then just go ahead and eat it. You can just go ahead and eat it. Right? The unspoken, obvious alternative is that you're allowed to eat the maaser sheni, but you first have to, or maaser ani, but you first have to take the afrasha. In other words, it's two things. There's the technical obligation to take the piece off, and then there's a separate issue of you're allowed to eat it. So he's saying you don't need to even take it off, and even kore shem, which is like a, you know, taking it off just with your mouth, just with your words, even that's not necessary. V'chacham omrim kore shem, you do have to at least be kore shem. You know, you have to say this 10% is the meiser ani, because it doesn't cost you anything, you ought to do it. V'eino tzarech lahafresh, but you don't need to actually take any of it off, because you're allowed to eat it still. So you'll actually designate, you know, these 10, you know, this part of the pile is the maaser ani, and then you just gobble it up anyways. Okay?
You put some money in the pushkin.
Yeah, you don't have to. You can spend the money yourself, by the way, right? You can spend the money. You can eat it. You can eat it. As long as I give it to myself here.
You read a line that wasn't in the Mishnah.
Did I?
No.
I don't think so. Okay, so we're gonna go on. Mishadalin.
Didn't I say that? You know, I said it.
The Chum Omrim Kore Shein, you just say this Maser Ani, Venot Zarach Lahafrish, and actually pulling it off is not necessary. Okay, Mishadalin. Now we're talking about giving gifts. Giving gifts, so the gifts you're talking about here are going to be the Trumas Maser, which belongs to the Kohen, and the Maser Ani, which belongs to the poor person. Again, you don't have to give Maser Ani, but let's say you want to. Now, there's a separate issue on Shabbos. We don't give gifts. We don't give gifts on Shabbos because it looks like you're doing transactions, which could lead you to come to write things down. Okay, so you don't do it on Shabbos. We don't give gifts. However, if it doesn't look like it's a gift, if just you're not going to come to that issue, then you're allowed to give it to him in a backhanded way, which we'll see in the Mishnah here. So it says Mishnah Dalit, Mishikar Shem L'Trumas Maaser Shel Damai. If someone has been Kore Shem, he designated a particular something of his food, L'Trumas Maaser Shel Damai, he says, this is the Trumas Maaser of my Damai, Ula Maaser Ani Shel Damai, Shel Vadai, I'm sorry, and Maaser Ani, even a Vadai, Maaser Ani, meaning the food that goes to Ani, even a Vadai, because there, of course, it has to go to the Ani, as opposed to Damai, which you could eat yourself, Lo Yitlem b'Shabbos. You can't take them in Shabbos, right? You're not allowed to move them. Nothing. They're off limits to you, and they're off limits to be given away, right? However, v'maya kohen or ani l'mudim le'achol etzlo, you can't give them away on Shabbos. But if you have the kohen who would get the truma's ma'aser, I should say, or the ani who would get the ma'aser ani, and they're l'mudim le'achol etzlo, like they're regulars by you. L'mudim means accustomed to eat by you. So nothing looks strange here. So then you can invite them. Yovo v'yochlu. They can come and eat that food. That's their piece, and they can have it. Nothing looks strange. Ubilvad shiyodim. You have to let them know. You have to tell them that actually I'm not really feeding you out of my pocket. This food belongs to you anyways. There's an overarching one of the overarching issues in interpersonal relationships is called ganevas das. Right? You're not allowed to mislead people. So those are, of course, like everything else. The rules are complicated, and as a general rule, You're not obligated to disabuse somebody of an assumption that they have. They make an assumption that you're doing something that you're really not. You don't have to alpi din, nirka din, tell them, and don't think I'm such a good guy. If they want to assume that, they can assume that. But you're certainly never allowed to say something misleading. And here it's doing something misleading. A person will obviously assume if you invite them for dinner that you're feeding them out of your pocket, and then they'll feel a debt of gratitude to you. But that's not right here because it wasn't your food, it was their food. So you have to tell them. So that's interesting. You're so important. You're so.
They would eat food, though, right?
They eat their food. They just should know it's not out of my pocket. Yes, they shouldn't owe you. So you shouldn't falsely engender them with a sense they owe you a debt of gratitude. Sorry.
It wasn't yours.
Yeah, it wasn't yours. You just can't.
But it's not a kashrut issue.
No, not kashrut. No, not kashrut. Just.
You're still feeding them, and they're taking the time to feed them. It's in your house.
Okay, so whatever you are. But the point is, what you aren't. That's all. That you can't. They shouldn't be misled to think that you're doing what you're not doing. No gifts on Shabbos.
But he can come take the gift.
Because it's not looking like you're giving a gift. He's a regular dinner guest at your house, and his plate is his portion. What's the problem? Nothing suspicious. Nothing that even looks like a financial transaction is going on. You're just eating dinner at your house. It's not Maris Ayin. It's like giving gifts we don't do because it looks like it's like a transaction. I'm giving you something on Shabbos. The next thing you know, I'll give it to you today and you'll pay me tomorrow. The next thing you know, that's the fear. Okay. Good. Okay. Mishnah Hay. Now Mishnah Hay to the end of the parak. We're dealing with the credibility of a Maratim here in like some unusual cases. So Ha'omer Lamicha Enu Ne'eman Al Maestras. One who says to someone who's not Mishnah Hay.
Yeah, you said the end.
Ha'omer Lamicha Enu Ne'eman Al Maestras. If one says to a person who's not believed on his Maestras, Kachli, and he says, let's call him his servant for a second. Love Dafka, his friend. The point is, do me a favor, Kachli, and go get for me, Mimi Shehu Ne'eman, Umi Shehu Maaser. Go for me and get me, buy my vegetables from a trustworthy source, someone who's Ne'eman and who's Maaser. This is the mission that was in the back of my head rattling around when you had the Gears of the Yerushalmi. the double lashon, if one is ne'eman and one is, so that's this. Okay, but, okay? So then there could be a difference between the two. But anyways, yep. So now, the one is gift from someone who's reliable. And he's me'ish ploni, and he comes back and says, like, yes, I got it from Joe, that everyone knows is kosher. Hareza ne'eman, he's believed that it came indeed from Joe, or from Yosef. Okay? Because even though this person's not normally believed on Hafrashas, but here, like, he's setting himself up for losing his job, whatever it is. He's confirming, I bought it from such and such a person and place. It'll come out. We never assume that a person will lie in a situation where, like, the truth will come out sooner or later and he'll get busted. And that's a general principle. You know, people do lie. Because they're psychotic. What?
It's
a Zenonema. Not in Zenon. It's not for the servants, not for the. Oh, sorry. Again. If a person who says to his servant who's not believing the Maestros, copy the Misha who Ne'eman, go, do me a favor, go to the Shuk and buy something for me from someone who's Ne'eman, who Misha who Maestr, and he does Hafrashas. Then Eino Ne'eman, he's not believed to do that. But if he says Me'ish Ploni, if he says, no, I bought, I'm sorry, maybe I skipped those words and I said it, I'm sorry. So if he just comes back and says, I did it, here's the kosher food, that's not good enough. If he says Me'ish Ploni, he says, I bought it from Yosef the kosher, you know, farmer, then Hareza Ne'eman, because he's setting himself up for the fall, otherwise he's not likely he's going to set himself up like that. Right? People will always, if you check him after him, the Mishnah, the Mefarshim actually say, in the first case, what if you start pushing, oh yeah, where did you buy it from? And he starts, you know, making up stories. So that's still not, human psychology is that a person will, you know, make excuses up and they'll say, oh well, I thought he was good enough, I didn't realize. But if he, L'Chachila says, I bought it from such a person, they're not going to make up that lie because it's obviously they're just going to get busted sooner or later. Okay, now halach likach mimenu. Now, if he went and he bought from him, va'amar lo lo matz. Say no. It's sorry. Go to Yosef the kosher butcher, kosher farmer, and buy me my food. And he went to buy from va'amar lo lo matzasi. I just couldn't find him. I couldn't find, you know, your favorite farmer Joe. Instead, I couldn't find him. Lo matzasi v'lakachti lach ma'acher shu ne'eman. I bought you from some other guy, and don't worry, he was kosher. So, eno ne'eman. Okay? The Mefarshim ask, and most say, indeed, if you would say, you know, I didn't buy it from Joe, I bought it from Shimon, the kosher farmer, that also should be good. Presumably that should be good too. Because, again, same logic. Although the Ra'ah disagrees. Okay. Yeah, fine. Okay, so that's the principles are clear, and the psychology of lying. Ne'emanus.
The servant
is told go buy from Yosef the kosher farmer, and he comes back and he says, I couldn't find Yosef, so I bought it from I bought it from someone else equally good. That's not good enough. No, that's the first case. So someone else who's equally good, but it doesn't specify who. Then Eino Ne'eman. And then I spoke out, but if he would have specified him and said, I bought out. That's right, that's right. I spoke that out because it seems obvious that if he's the one who pipes up and says, you know, I bought it from Shimon, that should be good. But most people say, yeah, indeed. I'm saying there is someone who doesn't like that. He argues like a whole complicated psychological what people are prepared to lie about and not prepared to lie about. But anyways, okay, yeah, principles are clear. Okay, good. Mishnah Vav here. And this is actually a fascinating Mishnah about more like severe collusion, you know, corruption. Hanechnas la'ir. A guy goes into a city, ve'enu makir adam sham. He knows nobody. He doesn't know anybody. He needs to eat. So what's he going to do? You know, got a problem. Amar mikan ne'eman. So he asked in the shuk. So who can I trust? Right? Mikan ma'aser. And who does hafrashas? Right? Amar lo echad. And one person says to him, ani, you know me. I got all my stuff is with lots of ingredients. Eino ne'eman. You can't rely on him because he doesn't know. Amar lo. But if that person, instead of saying I'm kosher, he says ish ploni ne'eman, that guy, and you know that guy over there, he is he. You can trust him. He is the kosher food supplier. So Hareza Neman, you can believe him, which is interesting. That was worth saying. So the reason, so he's not believed normally, but here we're believing in him. The reason why is because the rabbis didn't want this poor hungry guy to be any hungrier than he needs to be. So because
he's not paying for this.
Not paying for services. That's right. Yeah, not paying for services. That's I guess a part of it too. But the point is that this visitor to town, he is hungry, and we don't want to suffer, and we rely on the fact that most Amaratzim are do take up rushes, and we rely on the fact that people don't generally lie. So we're gonna rely on those facts. Let the guy eat. Okay. Now this assumes he knows nobody, but if he knows anybody in town, then he's forced to go to that person and make a proper inquiry. Understand? This leniency only exists where he has no other option. If he has another option, he has to, you know, get on the subway and go, right, an hour into town to go ask the one guy he knows where he can buy his fruits and vegetables from. Okay. Now, halach lika chumeno. So the guy went now, the out-of-towner went, and he purchased from, you know, the recommended supplier. Amrlo, and he says to the guy who bought from, mikan mocher yashan. Who around here sells yashan? So the pasha says yashan means kemochi, from kemochi yashan. That means that there's a din, there's a separate isra from the Torah that you can't. If I'm sure you can pay them, I'll explain it in case I don't know what yashan is. You're not allowed if every year on the second day of Pesach they bring a korban omer, right? If they have a base of around. So any grain that take root after that day are forbidden until the next year when they bring the korban omer again. So yashan means from the old crop, and that's permissible. Grains that started taking root before the omer was brought, so that's considered yashan. Once the omer is brought, you're allowed to eat it. But the stuff that came afterwards, you're not allowed to. And in this modern day and age, it's actually very complicated because people import. Like I know when I was in London, different days of the week, the different times of the year, say they imported. Sometimes it's Canadian wheat, and it depends. You can assume that high gluten wheat comes from here and low gluten. It's complicated, right? So yashan. Now, outside of Eretz Yisrael, halacha l'maisa, yashan's not necessarily such a big deal. But anyways, we leave that all as it may. The point is, the pasha is asking where can I get yashan from, and the ne'emanus of people using yashan is the same as other pashas. Rashi and Tosfos both, sorry?
In Eretz Yisrael, it's still rice.
In Eretz Yisrael, it's a big problem. Big problem. But I don't...
None of our grain is a problem, yeah, because it's so universal, I think.
Right. Here it's... but anyways, in the mission here, so that's the Pashas. Rashi and Tosos both learn, and the Rush actually, that the Yashnir means like old quality wine, like good wine, and not halachic issue at all, just quality, right? Just I'm asking for where to get the good stuff, you know. But either way, the point is, he asks this person who's recommended to eat by, to buy from, I should say, Amarlo, and the seller says, Mishalach Etzli, you know that guy who sent you to me? The first guy you spoke to? He's the guy, right? Right? You should buy from him. So, Afal Pi Shehen Kagomun Zedzeh, it looks like they're in, you know, they're in cahoots. Yeah, it looks like, yeah, exactly. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Even so, Re Elu Nehem on him, you can rely on them. Like, who says they're lying? Okay? You're allowed to rely on this situation. Yeah, again, you have no choice in the matter. You have to believe somebody, so you're allowed to extend. So we're not assuming people are liars.
With Chodesh, if it says he himself is Neman.
He's an Eilu Neman. Oh, that's why Rashi tells us want something else. Because if the Nemanus is the same, it becomes problematic. Why would we assume this guy tells kosher in terms of Hafrash, not kosher and Yashan? Yeah.
What's
okay.
The word
kagomel? Gomel means to like bestow on someone else. It's an idiom. I don't know. It means like that. They're, you know, they're like in cahoots. They're kagomel, like they're, you know, they're doing for each other. Yeah, gomel chasidim. You know, they're like
bestow.
Reciprocate. Yeah, but yes, all these words. The literal word, I don't know what it means. Literally, it means
bestow.
Like one who bestows, but yeah, the direct object is missing. Zetzeh. Okay, fine. Anyways, Harei Elu Neman. These guys are both partners in crime. Hopefully not in crime. However, Mishnah Zayin are partners in crime. Look at this one. hachamarim, donkey drivers, shenichnasu l'ir, they show up in the city, and amar echra, one guy says, shali chadash v'shel chaver yashan. Well, my stuff is chadash, either usher or low quality, but my friend, you know, he's got the good stuff, or the kosher stuff, right? Shali eino mesukin v'shel chaver mesukin. I mean, my stuff is not necessarily kosher, but his stuff definitely is kosher, right? And the Yerushalmi brings on top of that the bad quality guy schlepping, you know, scales along because he intends to do business a little later on, right? So eino ne'amanin, they can't be trusted, because obviously what's going on here is in this city, you know, one guy sends the other city, the other guy sends business. They're in cahoots. They're obviously in cahoots together. Or we're,
I didn't understand the difference between the two.
So they're close cases, but I'll explain in a second when I finish the Mishnah. But there is a difference here. One is right. They've come to town premeditated in the story here. The other one is you have to knock, you ask the guy for a tip and then he asks a second tip, so that's not, you're the one who's setting them up. Here they're setting themselves up, you know, it's being good cop, bad cop. So eino ne'amanin, that's no good. Rabbi Yehuda omer ne'amanin, Rabbi Yehuda says even that you can believe. So Rabbi Yehuda is motivated by something a little different. Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, which is hard for us to imagine the world that they lived in. He's afraid that the town only has one supplier of food, these jokers of them, and if you start giving them a hard time, they're not going to come back. And if they don't come back, you're going to be hungry, and then the town will starve. So he's afraid that the town's going to starve, because right, if you give the suppliers a hard time, they'll just say, fine, you know, Walmart style, you know, you don't like when we do business, so fine, you don't have to have us. And that's if it's food, he was afraid of that. So he says, since Rov Amaratzim are, like, not everyone's a liar, and most people do take a proper freshness, so, and here we're running a big risk of jeopardizing the town's security, so then, in this case, we'll be lenient and even allow you to believe these two guys who are in cahoots, ostensibly in cahoots.
What's the significance of the fact that they're donkey drivers as opposed to fruit vendors like the first?
Oh, I don't know. They comes from, they're out of towners.
I'm saying, so what's the?
Oh, they're out of towners. No one knows them. They show up in your town. I guess that's also maybe relevant.
Oh, they show up in your town?
Yeah, they come in their camels and their donkeys.
Once again, you're in a foreign town.
No. So I'm sorry. So in Mishnah, no, I'm sorry. Yeah, Mishnah Vav, you're the foreigner. You have no one to ask to. Right? In this case, they come to your city and they have this unlikely story. But if you're saying, listen, if you chase them out of town, then who's going to come next? Right? So he's leaning.
Are the cases given by the vendors in the last Mishnah in the Hamarim in this case different?
So they,
or is it just the context is different?
Well, you see that there's a big difference because the lach is opposite. The lach, the first case is you can trust these two guys who are kugomlin.
I'm saying is it different because of switching in the circumstances, or is it different because they're saying
the pashas is, there's a few opinions here, but I think the simple understanding and the reasonable understanding is that one looks a lot more suspicious than the other. In the first case, you have to ask somebody. You ask the guy and he tells you, oh, the charedim buy that guy's shop. And once you're there, you ask, you know, so you ask him, where can I get, let's go with the simplest shot of all, the Rashi shot. You ask him, so now, good, now, thank you for the kosher food, but now I want, like, the delicacy. So he says, oh, you went, the first guy you met, he's the guy to go to. Of course, like, you know, when you go to ask someone for a tip, they say, tell him I sent you. That doesn't mean they're the liars. You have to believe somebody, so believe this guy. He's not believed.
That's not a lot.
What's
the way Rashi learns it, whether it's
what, the Yashin?
It doesn't make a difference, it's not
cautious. Right, yeah, the question, yes. That's the difference of the shot. Yeah, but it's difficult either way. Do you understand why? If you don't, it's a...
Are you talking psychology? Just to know the psychology's got
Yeah. Well, because now, the question is, has now, like, the fact that the circle has been gone full circle and they're patting with the backs, maybe the whole deal's off, maybe they're in cahoots. Right. So obviously these guys are like the chamarim. In the second case, the chamarim walk in and they got this funny story and the whole thing looks dubious.
What's funny is the fact that they said, yeah, you can't trust me, but you can trust that.
Yeah, the whole thing's fishy. The whole thing's fishy. I mean, I guess the mission makes it sound very extreme. In real life, it could be obviously much less extreme, like, as people do. You know, if you ask a vendor straight out, is your stuff kosher? You might say, oh, no, my stuff isn't kosher, but, you know, but yeah, I'm not so strict, but all the from people buy it on the street. And it happens. It's happened to me before. Okay. Right? You can ask people and they'll tell you. They're straightforward. So he says, listen, I can't be bothered to take this stuff. My stuff's the better stuff, but it's not as kosher. I don't know, whatever, you know, in real life. Anyways.
You're saying that would be acceptable?
No, that's the chamarim case. I'm saying the chamarim case, I don't have to imagine being a ridiculous case. I mean, but that, you know, but the Mishnah, as always, cuts out all the irrelevant stuff and just says, this is the bottom line, they're in cahoots.